Hello, welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. This is Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Today's guest is Steve Strain. Steve is the radio voice of Wichita State Women's Basketball on KFH. We're going to talk about the Shockers, who are 7-2. They play Saturday at Koch Arena against Grambling State. They then finish non-conference play with an interesting stretch that we will certainly discuss. They play at North Texas. They're home against Kansas, and then they travel to Oklahoma. So, Steve, the Shockers are off to a good start to this season, and I am going to say that the road wins, Wyoming and Denver, told us something important about this team. What's your view of maybe the hierarchy of good signs? Where do those two games rank?
Yeah, they're pretty high because the teams that they've played at home, they should be, and to their credit, they've beaten them handily. But I was really anxious, especially after seeing the exhibition game here and the season opener against Chicago State, to see what would happen when they went on the road, especially at Wyoming, because they played in the NCAA tournament last year. The start was a little sluggish for the team. They were down 13-6, I believe it was, when Keitha Adams called the timeout late in the first quarter, and they just dominated after that. And there were 2,500 people there. Wyoming draws well, and that crowd was never really in the game after that. And so I thought for so many players that are new, and these kids are still trying to develop some chemistry with one another on the floor in that environment to quiet the crowd and control the game in the second half all the way through, said a lot about what this team is capable of. And the Denver game was not easy either. Denver came out firing some three-pointers early as well and grabbed a quick lead. And Coach Adams went to the bench, made some adjustments, and they took the crowd at Denver out of that game as well. And I think any time you go on the road and you don't come back home for 4 or 5 days and you play two games, that doesn't happen a lot in college basketball. And they won both of those games. And so I thought that really was a positive indication of what this team's capable of. Not to mention, Paul, with so many international players here, they've been here for months, granted, but they've not done anything like that. They've not gotten on an airplane and a bus and stayed out of town for 3, 4, 5 days. Kids really had a good chance to bond off the floor as well, and I think Coach Adams has talked about that too. So really, on the floor and off the floor, I think that road trip this team gained a lot from.
I know Wyoming is very proud of its elevation. It's kind of branded all over the arena from what I can tell. Did that have any effect on that game?
You know, it's funny. We were just talking with Carla Brimaud about that on the coach's show Monday night, and she actually said that, you know, at first we did start noticing, why am I getting so tired so quickly? And then they kind of reminded each other, well, yeah, it's the altitude. But I don't know if this is the reason, but they really did kind of slow that game down to a half-court game. I think where that can really catch up to you is if it's a track meet, and that game wasn't. It was very much a half-court game, so probably didn't affect them as adversely as teams probably try to run up and down more. But that was really a solid, solid win for them.
One of the coaches told me they told the players it was the zip code, not the elevation.
Yes.
I don't know if that's actually true or not, but if they did, that's a good way to deal with it.
Yeah.
So one of the parts of this season, one of the narratives of this season was last season, and the Shockers really had to persevere through some difficult times. I think they had chances to just shut it down because of the numbers and COVID and all those things going down, and there were schools that did do that. But Keitha Adams was really proud of the way her team battled through. I think by the end of the year, I think she kept saying, we found our team over the last few weeks. So the perseverance of gutting it through a difficult 2020-2021, how are you seeing that carry over and help this group?
Yeah, she gets a lot of credit for that, because what that did is that really, I think, instilled in them, you know, for one, a don't quit attitude. Keep fighting through perseverance. And they did that last year in spite of some adverse situations. And just her overall positive attitude, I think, has been kind of contagious for this team, because she is very much a glass half full person, you know, in situations like that. She was going to keep fighting, and you're right, they did, you know, probably have legitimate reasons to shut her down, like SMU, like Duke and some other programs did. Not knocking those schools, that's what they felt like was right for them. But to her credit, she said, "Nope, we're gonna fight through this." And I think that has rubbed off on this team, that they can overcome adversity and really give them a sense of purpose to appreciate that they have a chance to play here at Wichita State. When last year, I think there were times where that was in jeopardy.
Yeah, they were shorthanded. I think I have to go back and look, but I think maybe the most illustrative example was, I don't think they practiced with 10 people until early second semester, maybe late first semester, something like that. There were a lot of difficulties.
Yeah, I know this, Paul, and I'm pretty certain that the only time they dressed 10 was at the conference tournament.
Yeah.
And every game prior to that, they dressed less than that. And actually, you know, to kind of finish off your point there, I think even last year, then they started to see the benefit of sticking it out, because they played well in the conference tournament. They won the first conference tournament game for Coach Adams, and then they really competed in the second one. And so I think that also helped create some carryover into this season, whereas, again, had they closed down shop, then that momentum opportunity would have never existed.
Offense was a big emphasis for this team over the spring and the summer and into the fall. And the Shockers are scoring more. They're playing at a faster tempo. They rank second in the American Athletic Conference in scoring and in shooting percentage. What changes have you seen to the offense, and how's that paying off?
Well, I think a few things have helped. First of all, the addition of Jane Asende has kind of given up some pressure on the perimeter, to open up more opportunities for people like Mariah McCulley, who's scoring very well. Carla Brimal, still like to see her knock down three-point shots at a higher clip. But still, I think she's getting more open looks now this season. And so I think that Jane's presence has helped. Trajada Colbert has really, really come a long way in the post also as a scoring threat. Asia Strong's had a couple of bad games, but for the most part, she's going to be a 10-12 point performer night in and night out. So I just think that the presence of those three players I just mentioned inside has also helped the outside game and give them a more well-rounded offense, rather than just try to settle for the outside shot like they were doing maybe a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I really like that three-person rotation. They're active, they rebound, pretty experienced, especially with Trajada, Asia's in her second year here. So I think they've got some potential there to really do some damage scoring in and around the basket.
Yeah, Keitha had said 2 years ago, she said, "I really want to go out and get a stretch four." I still remember her telling me that. We were texting back and forth about what she was looking for recruiting, and that's when they went out, around the time they were looking at and talking to Asia Strong, and she got a stretch four. Asia's maybe stretch four is not 3-point stretch, but she's enough of a stretch. She's got some good touch from 10-12 mid-range, and so she will go in there at the same time sometimes with Jane or with Trajada, and Asia can be the four and those two can be the five, and just when they're in there together, two of those three, it really does make a nice 1-2 punch at the four and the five, and again, can soften defenses up from having to just focus on outside shooting. So, yeah, I think that goes a long way towards helping this team, is the post presence has taken some of the pressure off the perimeter.
A positive development helping the offense that may have gone unnoticed is they're winning at the foul line, which is different from last season. They're shooting 74.9%, which is really good. That's up from 67% last season. They're getting to the line more often than their opponents. How do you explain that? What's that a product of?
A lot of practice. You know, when they were struggling the last couple of years in that department, they shot a lot of free throws. And I don't think that it started showing up in the stat sheet during games as quickly as Coach Adams would have liked, because I know they were practicing free throws the last couple of years a lot when those numbers weren't where they are now. But I think finally, just all that work in the gym in previous years is starting to pay dividends. Look at Trajada Colbert, Paul. She's been around a 50% free throw shooter the last couple of years. And this season, she's at 78%, 15 of 19. So give her, for one, a lot of credit for getting to the line. And also, I think that because of the post presence that we talked about, Asia's got good touch at the free throw line, although she's not shot a whole lot of free throws this season. She's 8 for 8. But Asende is going to get there. Colbert's going to get there. And so I think that, this team, knowing that they're going to get to the line more with those posts there, they're going to have to shoot it at a good clip. And they are. And, you know, just in general, Paul, she's wanted to go out and recruit better shooters. to get the offense up. And obviously, if you're going to go out and find better shooters, then one of the areas that that's going to pay off is at the free throw line. DJ McCarty is a kid that's at 77%, just a good all-around player and a fun one she is to watch. But yeah, she's 14 of 18. And Seraphine Bastin, you know, one of the things I think about her being such a great rebounder at 5'8", is she's going to get to the free throw line as well, too. And she's at 81%. I mean, how many point guards do you know that have already shot 42 free throws this season? But she has, just because she's so physical, partly. And so give her credit, because she is a real workhorse when it comes to... I remember the Northern Iowa game last year. She missed one of two free throws, Paul, that would have won the game for the team. Instead, it went to an overtime, and they ended up losing in double overtime. Hard-fought game. After that game, she was out on the floor shooting free throws, and coaches said they had to drag her off the court and tell her it's time to go home. You've been here all day. You just played a double overtime game. And she was doing it again here a home game or two ago. Came out after the game and shot. And so just that hard work starting to pay off, especially at the free throw line.
Yeah, that's a place you can really make up some ground if you are getting to the foul line and if you are scoring there. That can be really helpful. Defensively, Shockers are holding opponents to 35.2% shooting. They're forcing 17.2 turnovers a game. And the pressure defense seems really effective for this team. When you talk to the Shockers after the game, they enjoy that. And they seem to, you know, create turnovers. It gets them out on fast breaks, and that's helpful. Why has the pressure defense been successful for this team?
I think a lot of it's depth. I think that she's had some players that are really good defending, and she's wanted to press more in previous years. You take like a Mariah McCauley, who seems like she's always getting in passing lanes, deflecting passes, one of the top players in steals on this team. But last year, because of simple depth, you don't want to press too much or you'll wear your kids out. You don't have many reserves on the bench. They don't have that problem this year. So they can spend more time and use more energy out there on the floor doing things like pressure defense, because if a kid gets a little gassed, well, you've got somebody on the bench you can bring him in for. Couldn't do that last year. Didn't have that luxury. So I think the fact that they've just got more depth on the bench allows Coach Adams the opportunity to really ask for more pressure defense from the kids that are out there on the floor. Just another one of the advantages of having the depth that they have that you don't necessarily think of. We think of depth in terms of, oh, you got kids to come off the bench because of foul trouble. You got more flexibility with matchups. If you got a matchup problem, you got more options off the bench. Well, there's another byproduct of having depth, is that you can also press more. And if you got a kid that gets a little winded, well, you got somebody to bring it off the bench that can take the place.
You mentioned Seraphine, and she's probably worthy of some discussion. She has had a really nice career here at Wichita State. Always plays hard, very solid, seems like a real good leader on this team. She's point guard, but she's averaging 7.7 rebounds, which I think is indicative of just the hustle and the physical play that you mentioned. Leads the team with 35 assists. She's second with 11 steals. She seems to be the foundation of this team. How do you describe her importance?
She's the glue player. She's the one that when you ask a coach, who's your glue player, the one that holds this thing all together, you know, when it's working, and it's her. Not just because she's the point guard, but because she's so well-respected anyway for her hard work ethic, kind of like what I mentioned earlier, for the kind of person and leader she is. And she just does so many things for this team, though, on the floor, including her rebounding. You know, it's funny, when we were at Denver, it was a very bizarrely officiated game. She came flying through the lane, grabbed a ball, and then somebody literally reached in to Seraphine, Paul, and they called a foul on Seraphine. And Coach Adams went to the officials and they said, "You've probably never seen a kid like this before, I understand, but she's the top rebounding point guard in the country." At that time, she was averaging 10 rebounds per game. So I think even officials sometimes have to adjust to seeing a kid doing some of the things that she does, flying through the lane, grabbing offensive rebounds. But yeah, I mean, other than outside shooting, she really does it all. A very good defender, good ball distributor. Her decision-making also is very good. And she's got more weapons now. She's got more options to throw it to. You know, a lot of times she was trying to set up Carla for the three. Don't have to do that anymore. You know, she can look inside, she can look outside, she can penetrate and finish, which she does very well. or she can penetrate and kick after the defense kind of sucks into her. So just really good court recognition, good vision, good basketball IQ, just everything you want in a point guard.
She had a play against Oral Roberts, which I think you would agree was indicative of what she does. She kind of harassed, or didn't kind of harass, she harassed an Oral Roberts ball handler all the way up past half court, I think, caused a loose ball. I believe it was Mariah McCauley picked it up and lay up. One of those plays that really stood out. We didn't ask Keith about that after the game. I don't know if you did or not.
I didn't mention that particular play. But yeah, and Mariah's going to probably be the one that gets the credit for the steal and everything and shows up in the stat sheet. But that's another thing that Seraphine does is she just makes everybody else better around her and does some of those little things that may not show up in the stat sheet. But you can go back on film and say Seraphine Bastin's presence caused that to happen.
Jane Asinde, a transfer from Grayson College in Texas. She has 4 double-doubles on the year. How's her addition helped this team?
It's been huge in a lot of different ways. Again, they needed more post presence, and they got it. And it's taken some pressure off of Asia Strong. Usually two of the three, fours, and fives will be in at the same time between she and Strong and Colbert. And defenses cannot just now focus on Asia Strong in the paint. They can't just focus on Trajada Colbert because usually Jane is going to be in the game with one of those two players. And it really creates a matchup problem for defenses down in the paint. I like her versatility. I remember in the exhibition game, she got a steal out near the top of the key and ran the open floor, took it to the other end of the floor. She got fouled. And then in the first game of the season, in a similar spot, she got a steal in the open floor, and she took it all the way and looked really good in the open floor for a kid that's 6'2". So she's got some versatility, some mobility. Would like to see her shoot the free throw a little bit better, but that's starting to come along. She's in a better spot now than she was a few games ago. But the things that she does are really, really huge for this team. One of the things that concerned me early, Paul, is that on the road when we took on Wyoming and Denver, they had a little bit better post play than we had seen prior to that. And she struggled a little bit, especially in the Wyoming game and early in the Denver game. But as the Denver game went on, she started to make her presence more known. She looked more confident. And then at South Dakota, who had very good post play, she was terrific. So I think that just in these 9 games here, maybe she's already matured to what it's like to go on the road and play at this level, which really bodes well moving forward. But good post presence, a good touch around the rim, a good rim protector, just does a lot of nice things for this team that's going to make them dangerous in the post.
She's averaging 10.8 points and a team-leading 9.3 rebounds, only playing 21.6 minutes. So you're getting a lot of production in kind of short amount of time, shooting 52% from the field. So she's definitely been a boost in those areas.
Yeah, and I think her minutes will increase. You know, she was coming off the bench for a while, and then a few games ago she started for Trajada Colbert, and I think that's where she got her first double-double. And she's been a staple in the starting lineup ever since, and I think that will probably stay that way based on what she's done. It's really a neat story. She was at Grayson College, as you pointed out, coached by Bill Damath, who was an assistant here for Keita, and he was with her for a while at UTEP. And so he actually is the one that encouraged Jane maybe to come here, told Coach Adams she ought to look at Jane. I don't know exactly the order, but nonetheless, he was instrumental in helping that happen.
Yeah, I talked to him yesterday. I'm working on a story about Jane, and he gave me a call back, so I got a little bit of background on
Very
her.
Very nice.
She has definitely been a nice addition. Let's talk about the American Athletic Conference. Had some interesting results in November and December. USF probably leads that discussion. They're nationally ranked number 17. They're 5-3. They've got wins over Oregon and Stanford. A close loss to Tennessee, and then inexplicably they lost to Texas Arlington. I'm not even sure what they're doing playing at Texas Arlington, but they did. Tulane has a win over Alabama. UCF is 6-1. They've got wins over Virginia, Southern Cal, and Arkansas. How do you see the AAC unfolding at this point?
Yeah, it's impressive. I was just taking a look the other day through some of the non-conference wins for this team, and there are a lot of Power 5 wins in this league. And so, you know, I think South Florida is still the cream of the crop, but there is some teams that that are on the rise in this league. I think Wichita State's one. I think Tulane is another case in point, the victory over Alabama. Central Florida got a really nice win over Arkansas. And there are some others that you touched on. So I think that as we look at the conference, while South Florida is the cream of the crop, they'd also just prove that on any given night, they're vulnerable. UTA is a good team. They're reached the polls in the mid-majors. So UTA is on the rise. And hey, come conference tournament time, if somebody's able to catch South Florida on a similar night, that tournament is wide open, and then it's anybody's to win. And then all of a sudden, somebody who you're not expecting might end up in the NCAA tournament. But I think that Central Florida is always really steady. They do a really good job of recruiting good athletes, play very good defense. They're probably going to be in the conversation for at least a conference runner-up. And then after that, I think that Tulane and Wichita State are two teams that are really on the rise. And I thought from the beginning that this team being eighth was not doing this team enough justice. People did not know, for example, about Jane Asende, and we did, and we do, and they're learning about her now. And I think if you poll people, again, the same poll in terms of the conference, Wichita State would probably be sixth or fifth at the lowest. And I think that Jane Asende has a lot to do with it. But time will tell. But I'm anxious for it to get here. Because again, you know, if South Florida stubs their toe in that tournament, then you know, anybody could step up and win that conference tournament. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Tulsa is 6-0, maybe haven't played the strongest schedule, but they are unbeaten. You mentioned UCF and their defense, and it's been outstanding. They lead the conference in scoring defense and field goal percentage defense. No one has scored more than 51 points against the against the Knights, so they are doing some things right on defense. Let's wrap it up by looking at this next stretch for the Shockers. They play Grambling State on Saturday, and then things get even more interesting at North Texas, at home against the University of Kansas, and then at Oklahoma. What do you hope that we learn over the Shockers as they get ready for the American?
Should take care of business, obviously, Saturday against Grambling State. And then those last three games, Paul, all provide a high level of intrigue. And North Texas will not be easy going on the road down there and playing. And, of course, now there's even more interest in that game, perhaps, since they'll be joining our conference here after a while. So you'll kind of get a preview of what that program is like. But that's going to be a challenge for this team. They're not a bad Conference USA team. And then, for obvious reasons, the next two games. Kansas here on the floor, you're playing a Big 12 team. That's going to be a nice resume win for you. But then from a publicity standpoint, there are going to be a lot of eyeballs on that game. I hope there are a lot of people here watching that game. You know, when it comes to recruiting battles within the state of Kansas, you know, you want to be able to have bragging rights and show kids around this part of the country that, hey, we just went head-to-head with Kansas and we knocked them off. And so from a recruiting standpoint, it's big. That one's got huge implications. And then obviously so does Oklahoma. Oklahoma's a one-loss team right now that plays a tremendously tough schedule, non-conference and conference. They're hovering right around receiving votes, I think, in the top 25. So that will be a big one to wrap up non-conference as well. So I think that those last three non-conference games really all very intriguing for different reasons. It'll be fun.
Wichita State's last matchup with Oklahoma was maybe one of the highlights of Keith Adams' stay here, an 88-83 win for the Shockers in 2019. So you know the dates. That is December 21st when the Jayhawks come to Koch Arena. The Shockers travel to North Texas on December 17th. And then they go to Oklahoma on December 29th, and that'll wrap up non-conference play. And then they get started at home in the American Athletic Conference against Houston on January 5th.
It's going to be fun. I'm anxious to see this team in conference play. Again, I think that things are wide open outside of maybe South Florida. I think that. And I think this team's going to surprise some people. I think the people who voted Wichita State eighth in the conference will quickly find out that maybe they should maybe hope for a second chance on that, because this team, I think, is better than that.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos, no good. 1 second, it's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.